welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
And welcome, everybody, to the Political Cesspool Radio program, Saturday evening, October 8th. I'm your host, James Edwards. I'm in my downtown studio, AM 1380, WLRM Radio, Memphis, Tennessee, going out to the AM-FM affiliate stations of Liberty News Radio, and I'm sitting here tonight with my good friend and co-host, Mr. Keith Alexander. And I'll tell you what we're going to do this first hour, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to give you a little sneak peek in the private lives of James Edwards and Keith Alexander. After this first segment, we're going to get down to business, but I just feel, Keith and I both had a family day today, and I just, you know, sometimes the greatest therapy is to share your experiences with your friend, and that's what we're going to do. I'm going to tell you about it, and then we're going to let Keith tell you about it from his side. I woke up this morning, Saturday morning, you know, I'm a family man, got a wife, an 18-month-old daughter. My wife says we're going to the Pink Palace. Now, that's not a brothel. That's what they call the museum here. The museum. I was in Washington, you know, last month, and there's a museum on every street corner. Here there is one museum, and it's called the Pink Palace Museum. And anyway, she said we're going to the Pink Palace. And then later on the drive over there, she says we're going to the Pink Palace Crafts Fair. And I'm thinking, okay, well, that's fine. I mean, you know, it's not really my thing, but I'll look at the museum. I'll read some things while she shops. Then we get there, and the Pink Palace Crafts Fair is not at the Pink Palace Museum at all. It's a few blocks over at Audubon Park, which is a wide-open field. And today, it was kind of like June weather. It's like 90 degrees in Memphis today. So now I'm starting to simmer a little bit because, I don't like to sweat. If I'm working out, if I'm playing sports, if I'm working in the yard, doing something that requires a little athleticism, that's fine. But when I'm dressed nicely, expecting to spend a day in a nice, cool museum, I don't want to go out to a crafts fair in the yard. But anyway, we go, we have a good time. I'm not going to complain. It was a good time with her, good time with the baby. My mom went. So that was the score there. But I tell you, we spent about 4 hours out in this blistering sun shopping. Now, I'm a family man, but I'm also a man. And there's only so much of that a man can take. So I was never so happy to get to the studio as I was tonight. And what I did when I got here, I got here a little early, turned on the fan, kind of relaxed here in the studio, waited for Keith to get here. I fired up my Sam Cooke records. I'm not going to admit that. We're pro-white. But listen, if there's one thing that has been contributed to our society, the blacks had a few good songs back in the 60s. There is probably no better love song ever than Bring It On Home to Me by Sam Cooke. Look it up on YouTube. This Old Heart of Mine by the Isley Brothers, another all-time great. Motown had some good songs. Temptations, Four Tops, The Supremes. These are great songs. Great songs. Now, I don't know if those contributions to our society negate all of the other things that their culture has brought with them. But, listen. And there's a good story about Sam Cooke, too. Maybe we'll tell you that later about how he passed away a little before his time. But anyway, that was my day today. I'm happy to be with you now. Crafts Fair and all. Keith almost topped that, though, with the way he spent his day. He was sharing with me that story when he rolled up.
Well, first, let me give you some commentary about James's day. James had to console himself with several Pronto pups, about four slices of pizza, several beers, and a couple of other repasts there so he could make it through the boredom at the crafts fair. He's not really into granola-munching hippies and all of their crafts and, musical productions and whatnot, which is what this crafts fair was all about. So I don't know how James got hooked into that. I went out and exercised today, rode the bicycle for about 13 miles on a track they have here in Memphis, visited and had lunch with my mother and with one of my sons. Then I went to a local Indian museum. Now, James was wrong when he said we only have one museum in town. We only have one big comprehensive museum, but we have a lot of little things like this Indian museum. And I went to that today. And quite frankly, it was really a kind of pathetic spectacle out there. I remember it from my childhood, and it used to have, just all sorts of great exhibits out there, but apparently there's been some tug of war between the local Indian tribe that has apparently claimed that place as their own, and they live there. And they don't really like to have a lot of visitors out there, so they've put the kibosh on a lot of the exhibits that they used to have there. So we went there, went on the nature trail, which is just, you know, like a typical walk in the woods somewhere. And then we came back here. But let me tell you something about this Pink Palace Museum that James is telling you about. It is actually a huge mansion built in the 1920s by a guy named Clarence Saunders, who's a native Memphian who founded Piggly Wiggly grocery stores. Well, you know, so what? Is that a big thing? Well, the big thing with Clarence Saunders was he invented the concept of the supermarket and made tons of money on it, and then he went bankrupt. And then he tried to go back into business after his bankruptcy, and the bankruptcy trustee took the position that the trustee owned the proprietary right to the use of his name, Clarence Saunders. So he had this grocery chain that he opened called Clarence Saunders Food Markets. And he was sued, took it all the way to the Supreme Court, and won. And when it was all over with, he called his new chain Clarence Saunders, Sole Owner of My Own Name Food Stores. And there's actually still one of those signs on a building on Lamar Avenue memorializing that. You know, Memphis is an old town, at least by American standards, and we have plenty of old buildings here, and we have that. Clarence Saunders had that huge mansion that basically he lost in bankruptcy, and it somehow wound up in the hands of the city of Memphis and became the headquarters, the site of the Memphis Museum. And that's where James thought he was going today, but wound up going to Audubon Park, named after the famous bird watcher, the guy that did all the categorization and naming of all the plant and animal species in America, John Audubon.
A little history of Memphis that you didn't expect to get tonight when you tuned into the Political Cesspool. But as I said, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to get down to business right after this first segment concludes. But that was the way we spent our days. And I was telling Keith earlier, when I was growing up, I would spend every weekend at my grandparents' house on my mother's side, and we would go to one of six places: the airport, which back then you could go back and watch the planes take off, which I always enjoyed doing as a kid without having a ticket. We'd go there, we'd go to the zoo, we'd go fishing, we would go to Litcherman Nature Center, we would go to the Pink Palace, and we would go to Chuckalisa, which is the Indian Museum, quote unquote. If you ever actually went to Chuckalisa, you wouldn't confuse it with the museum anymore. Back in the day, back even in the 80s when I was growing up, they had this elaborate replica reconstruction of an old-time Indian village in the field out there, and it was pretty magnificent, actually. And now all that's been bulldozed. You go to Chuckalisa now, and it's nothing but a grassy field, and you pay admission to see the grassy field where a representation of an authentic Indian village used to stand, and then there's a couple of little things that you can see in the hallway. But I tell you, if Memphis calls that a museum, my God, help us. We got to take a break. I'll let Keith respond to that, the pro-Chuckalisa guy here. We'll let him talk about it right after this. Stay tuned, everybody.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. I hope everyone's settled in now and ready for a adventuresome ride through the murky waters of the political cesspool this evening. We shared with you during that first segment how Keith and I spent our Saturday afternoons. How was yours? They sent us an email. We'd actually like to hear. I know it's going good now because you're here with us, and we certainly appreciate the company. But I guess, Keith, as much fun as we had during the opening minutes this evening, work must intrude. We are here to entertain, to enlighten, to inform, to educate. You can pick your adjective there, but we're here to give them a political talk show, and I certainly wouldn't mind talking about the Pink Palace and Chuckalisa for another hour. But nevertheless, you know, it really looks like the establishment media is trying to push Herman Cain on the Republican electorate and the GOP primaries. They are beginning to be emboldened to believe that they just might be able to pull this coup and build him up as if he were an electable candidate or even a qualified enough candidate to run at all, which, of course, he's neither. One of the Political Cesspool loyal listeners sent me in a video clip not long ago from Herman Cain performing at the Orlando straw poll. And in that debate, someone asked him how he, Herman Cain, was going to deal with China. And he responded, he said, "I've got a three-word solution for how to deal with China. Outgrow China." Okay, and if you didn't figure out what was so funny about that, ladies and gentlemen, is that he said he had three words. Outgrow China is two words. He thought out was a word, grow was a word, and China was a word. Outgrow is a compound word. But that's over his head. And guess what? He went on to win that straw poll. I mean, okay, you know, this is the Republican Party so scared to death to be the white man's party that they vote for this ignorant buffoon. And now you got the media. The biggest story in America this week is that sometime in the early 1980s, some guy in Texas wrote the N-word on a rock that later became owned by Rick Perry's father. And this is somehow a big news story that somehow involves Herman Cain. Anyway, what we're talking about now is the Republican primary field, and here to set the stage for you and run down the roster, Keith Alexander.
It's just absolutely incredible. You know, the truth is stranger than fiction. You have to understand when you look at this field that the national media elite, which is a blue state elite, which is a Jewish elite largely, which is a liberal elite, just cannot allow an authentic red state American white anywhere near the levers of power. And this is not an effort to try to sell you on Rick Perry, Ron Paul, Newt Gingrich, or any of the other red state Americans that are running for the Republican primary. They all have serious flaws, and we're going to get into those later. But what you need to remember is that Rick Perry, with all his flaws, apparently is the quintessential red state conservative. He hasn't gone to Harvard or Yale like Bill Clinton or Al Gore to get the rough edges polished off. He hasn't been converted to a blue state outlook. So consequently, they're rolling out the heavy artillery to try to sink him. Now, they would do the same thing with Ron Paul, but they think he's already sunk. So they're training their guns on Rick Perry right now. And Herman Cain, they are bound and determined, just like the Republican Party was in the Illinois senatorial race that gave us Barack Obama as a U.S. senator. They're bound and determined that the people of America are going to elect a black man as president. They would like nothing better than for Herman Cain to wind up winning this thing, despite the fact that he's a political novice, and he is basically running on a lie. He's running on the lie that he was this great private sector entrepreneur that turned around Godfather's Pizza and made it into a capitalist juggernaut. Nothing is further from the truth. Quite frankly, Godfather's Pizza did not flourish under his leadership. You can look this up on the internet. We may have something on it later on this week. But he's not some, young Tom Edison in blackface like he's portrayed by the national media. He's not this real smart guy. He is just a black person. And unfortunately, Herman Cain, the phenomenon of Herman Cain, the political phenomenon of Herman Cain, shows you what is wrong with mainstream conservatism today and why it will never win the victory in the culture war against liberalism. And furthermore, it is so feckless, so ineffective, so powerless, it cannot even roll back one advance, one aspect of liberalism. Once liberalism wins ground, it's never retaken. All that you can hope for with mainstream conservatism is to slow the pace of change, but the pace is of change is always relentlessly going to the left. And here's the reason why. Mainstream conservatives, and particularly blue state conservatives, are convinced in their heart of hearts that the civil rights movement was, one, righteously conceived, two, absolutely necessary for the salvation of America's collective soul, and three, was prosecuted by demigods, by people that were absolutely, like Caesar's wife, beyond reproach, like the sainted Martin Luther King or the sainted Fred Shuttlesworth that died. You know, they get all these minor deities in the pantheon of civil rights heroes, and they're always bringing them up. Hollywood and the entertainment industry, again, run by Jewish power and influence, never miss an opportunity to give us another heaping helping of warmed-up civil rights movement leftovers like the movie The Help. Like any type of, you know, whenever they can bring out that, you know, flickering footage of police dogs and fire hoses, it's going to come out because that is the root system. That is the key to modern liberalism. That is the safe harbor to which they always repair. And they, as a result, want to prove that all of liberalism isn't bad, just parts of it. And because they, it's like chopping off the top of a weed, folks. You chop off the top of the weeds if you don't destroy the root system, if you don't put some type of systemic killer in there, you know, like a Roundup or something that goes down to the roots. The weed is just going to grow back stronger and tougher and uglier than ever. And that's what's happened with liberalism in America. All these poor, benighted fools that you see out here on the street corner saying, with signs that say, pray to end abortion. Or they say, ban homosexual marriage. Or ban the, you know, the gay rights movement, this, that, or the other. They're never going to have any success. They are doomed to be failures because they don't understand the true nature of liberalism like we do here at the Political Cesspool. We are paleoconservatives. As paleoconservatives, we understand that every part and aspect of modern liberalism is bad. We have a saying around here, liberalism is the modern face of evil, and that includes the civil rights movement. Martin Luther King was a reprobate. Don't take my word for it. Get these new tapes that have been released in the past month of interviews by Arthur Schlesinger of Jackie Kennedy shortly after her husband's death and get the real inside skinny on what Martin Luther King was really like. And, you know, what does it say in the Bible? Can a good tree bring forth corrupt fruit? Can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit? All this was hidden. Why do you think that the federal judge put a 20 hiatus or a ceiling until the year 2025 on all of his records in the FBI? That's because if the truth were known about Martin Luther King, there would never have been a national holiday named after him, James.
We got to take a break, folks. We'll be right back.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get
out of this place. And welcome back to the Political Cesspool radio program, ladies and gentlemen. Barely made it into that commercial break without having to cut Keith off, but I tell you, he's got great timing. Great timing. He got that last word in with about a second and a half to spare. And you're probably asking yourself this question. Do I sit here mouth agape in awe sometimes of this man as he offers you his commentaries? Well, the answer is, of course I do. What else can I do? Do you? When you're listening to Keith on the radio, have you ever heard anybody else like this on the radio or any other show like this on the radio outside of the Political Cesspool radio program? I doubt it. That's why we're your voice. That's why you tune in each week. Just got to email Keith during the break from our friend Brian, one of our listeners in Arkansas. He's tuned in tonight and very excited about the show we've delivered so far. And, of course, what we're talking about right now, ladies and gentlemen, is the Republican primary field. We were talking about before Keith went on his commentary there a second ago, how the media is trying feverishly to replace Rick Perry with Herman Cain as the perceived and hyped up GOP front runner. And of course, as Keith mentioned, the last time that the Republicans put an unknown, unqualified black man up against Obama, it was Alan Keyes in the senatorial race there in Illinois. And Alan Keyes went on to receive the same percentage of the black vote as David Duke did when he ran for governor of Louisiana. So, and that's not a swipe at David. That's just a fact. That's just a statistical fact. But Republican voters are like kittens. The media can trick them over and over and over again. So there they were. They got this, you know, they got Alan Keyes to run. He got 8% of the black vote. And Alan Keyes was at least nominally on some issues a conservative. I think Herman Cain is certainly more to the left than Alan Keyes was. Anyway, Alan Keyes got 8% of the vote against Barack Obama. Herman Cain wouldn't get that much of the black vote against Obama should the Republicans be foolish enough to elect them as their standard bearer. But, Keith, we got a lot of more candidates to run through, as you well know.
Let me. We can't leave Herman Cain just yet, though, because if you'll remember Alan Keyes, who was supposed to be this wonderful black conservative, somebody that was going to warm the cockles of every true conservative's heart, what happened when he got into that senatorial race against Barack Obama? Well, the first thing out of his mouth is how he is a proponent of reparations for slavery. Secondly, he was a big supporter of affirmative action. Well, let me tell you, with conservatives like that, who needs liberals, James? This is the problem. Herman Cain, just like Alan Keyes, is a black man first and a conservative. In fact, he says himself, he says, I'm an American first, a black man second, and a conservative third.
That's right.
And I think being a conservative is a distant third. And quite frankly, I think being an American is really a fib. He's a black man, just like Alan Keyes was a black man. I would love during these debates to hear somebody with the balls to come and ask Herman Cain, what is your position on reparations for slavery, Mr. Cain? Mr. Cain, if you were elected president, would you eliminate all affirmative action by executive order? Would you make the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice prosecute the people that racially discriminate against whites? Would you make that the primary focus of the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice? Because that is the primary racial discrimination that's going on in America today. I guarantee you, conservatives, true conservatives, people that really are dyed-in-the-wool, 100% down-the-board conservatives, would not be pleased with his answers. America generally would not be pleased with his answers, so consequently, that question is never going to be asked. The silence will be deafening. And this is, you know, the reason they're doing this, you know, they say that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results each time. Well, that's what mainstream, lamestream conservatives do on the race issue. They think, you know, if you haven't learned from the Obama phenomenon that electing a black to become president doesn't do anything towards gaining white America absolution from the left and from the black population, you know, what is it going to take? Apparently, they think now if we just get a black conservative Republican elected, finally, they're going to forgive us. They're not going to forgive us. They're not going to forgive us because the race card is like an ATM card. If I had an ATM card that whenever I whipped it out, I could put it in a machine and get thousands of dollars back from the machine, would I give that card away? Heck no, and neither will the black population of America. The race card works too well, James. It's money in the bank. It always gets the desired result. And it doesn't matter how absurd the application, it doesn't matter how crazy the assertions are behind it. Whenever the race card is played, it just freezes things, and people are suddenly thrown down a rabbit trail, like in Alice in Wonderland, going down the rabbit hole. You've got to follow up and defend yourself against the race card. So consequently, Black America and the left will never give it up. So you might as well stop trying to gain absolution. You will never be forgiven for your sins. Your imaginary sins, by the way. We're talking about America and the guilt of white Americans. I read a letter to the editor by a lady here in Memphis that worked for 25 years for a UN anti-poverty initiative overseas. And she said, American blacks have nothing whatsoever to complain about. In fact, what they ought to do is be falling on their knees and thanking the good Lord for the wonderful good fortune that occurred when one of their ancestors was put on a slave ship headed to America, because they are the most prosperous black people in the world. You know, in places like Central America, Africa, South America, part of Asia, even a lot of Europe, there's no such thing as a house with a front yard, with wide paved streets, with fire hydrants, street lights, and as this person in this letter said, poverty in America means that you have a car, that you have a computer, that you have a flat screen TV, that you have plenty of food through EBT the government, cards. You have EBT cards, you have all of this stuff that's totally unheard of in the rest of the world. In fact, there are lots of wealthy people and middle class people in the rest of the world that don't have nearly the standard of living that so-called impoverished American blacks have here in America. It's come to the point that when somebody starts complaining about their disadvantages because of being black in America and how white America owes them, they really deserve nothing less than to be laughed at and ridiculed mercilessly, because what they're telling you is an absurd lie, James.
Well, Keith, I know that it's hard when you've got so much knowledge and so much information to share to stay on something as constrictive as the Republican GOP field. But we got to get into it. Not that you wasted a second of that time, because that was all very important need to know information. But anyway, Herman Cain will not cure what ails you, Keith said. So I guess we can write Herman Cain off as people we're going to vote for. Look, more and more, Keith, I've kind of had a hot and cold relationship with this guy in terms of my fancy for his candidacy, but I'm becoming more and more convinced that it truly is Ron Paul is our only hope. I just scheduled an article while you were talking just then to appear on the blog tomorrow afternoon, and Ron Paul went on a Spanish radio program, okay? And what would a normal GOP candidate do when on a Spanish television program? He would fall on his feet to grovel and try to suck up every brown vote he could get. Ron Paul said, listen, I'm not going to kowtow for the Latino vote. I'm not going to try to curry favor with special interest groups. My plan's good for everyone, and it's good for everyone equally. And if that's not good enough for you, then I might not be your guy. But let's look at the other candidates. And we talked about Ron Paul for a long time last week during the first hour. I plan to talk about him a little bit more in the second hour. But who you got out there right now, Keith? Obviously, Herman Cain and Rick Perry. We know that because of the big news story this week. Mitt Romney, Ron Paul. Keith says Newt Gingrich, although I haven't seen him. Keith promises me he's at these debates. Michelle Bachmann, although her star is fading fast. John Huntsman. Sarah Palin's not running. So you got about a half a dozen. Run down the list, Keith. You got about a half a dozen. Who are they?
Okay, you got John Huntsman. You got this new guy from New Mexico who made the great comment in one of the debates about his dog has created more shovel-ready jobs than our current president, which
Johnson.
Yeah.
Welcome back To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. We got so enthusiastic last time about our commentary. Right there before the end, we just missed the cutoff, and we got a little truncated. But here we are. We're back. And here's what we're going to do. We've got so much knowledge to share. It's just kind of hard to keep Keith in line sometimes. He's just too smart for the for talk radio. What we're going to do, we've been trying this hour, or the goal this hour was to handicap the GOP Republican primary field. So what I'm going to do is, Keith and I talked it out during the commercial break. I got a list now. I'm going to go down the list. He's got a minute to answer with the pro and con for each person on this list. Now, we know who's not in the game. People who we thought were going to be contenders, at least the media thought they were going to be contenders, but they're gone, or they didn't declare at all. Sarah Palin, Mike Huckabee, Chris Christie. All right, these are people we're not going to have to cover, but we are going to cover a half a dozen, seven of the GOP primary candidates that are at least getting token news coverage. We've already talked a lot about Herman Cain's. We're not going to talk about him no more. I really don't see any reason at all for you to vote for Herman Cain. At least some of these other guys, we're going to do a pro and a con. I couldn't even give you a pro about Cain. So here we go. Mitt Romney, Keith. Let's start with Mitt Romney, arguably the front runner.
Mitt Romney is a typical blue state conservative, which means that no nearsighted person can tell him from a moderate liberal. That's what he is. He says he's against globalism, but I guarantee you when all is said and done, more will be said than done. He may tut-tut, he may say, oh dear, and clasp his hands, but he's not going to stop what's going on as far as outsourcing American jobs and offshoring American industry. And he's not going to place tariffs on foreign goods. He's not going to take any serious sanctions against China. He is going to be business as usual. He's going to be basically the fifth term of the Bushes. Okay, then what's next?
Okay, so I guess we don't have a pro for Mitt Romney. I didn't hear anything positive there.
Well, the thing about Mitt Romney is he will say that he is, for example, against globalism, that he is for against some of the initiatives that Rick Perry has done regarding, for example, in-state tuition or whatnot. But all of that is just, you know, nibbling around the edges.
You know, I'm looking down this list, Keith, and the more I think about it, the harder it's going to be for you to come up with a pro to counterbalance some of these cons when we're talking about the GOP field. Michelle Bachmann. What I can tell you about Michelle Bachmann is that if you mention Israel in front of her, she starts to drool. Michelle Bachmann, pro and con. She was a darling early, but she seems to have faded fast in the GOP field.
She's like a Pavlovian dog. You mention Israel or Jews, and, you know, she starts salivating even though there's no food in the bowl. She is just totally sold out, lock, stock, and barrel. She is one of these brain-dead fundamentalists that have bought into Jewish dispensationalism. She's exactly the poster child for what I was railing against in the second segment. She's one of these anti-abortion, anti-gay marriage people that worships at the shrine of the civil rights movement, and as a result, she will be totally feckless. She'll be totally ineffective to do anything about reversing the cultural trend we have now towards the left.
Another big wheel in the Republican Party in the early 90s that was expected to have more of a splash than he's having currently, Newt Gingrich.
Newt Gingrich is a red state American, but he has been totally converted to a blue state viewpoint by his stint in Hollywood. Actually Washington, D.C. He is a lost cause. He will sell you out quicker than a lamb can shake its tail. Don't even consider that guy. He's a smart guy on the positive side of the ledger, but unfortunately, he ain't going to be smart to help the average American citizen, particularly the average white American citizen.
Let's go down to the lower tier of the GOP field before we work our way back up to the front. As I said, kind of hard to find pros for some of these guys, but what did you expect? Rick Santorum.
Rick Santorum is, again, a blue state conservative who's really liberal at heart. Again, he's another one that worships at the shrine of the civil rights movement. And, you know, you can't be, you know, people don't like him don't realize that if there was no Brown versus Board of Education, there would never have been a Roe versus Wade. There would never have been a gay rights movement or a criminal rights movement or a sexual revolution or a drug culture if there had not been a civil rights movement. He is not going to, he's a bunch of snake oil. He's not going to fix what ails America. And he is afraid to, you know, take on the leftists, you know, directly and tell them that everything they have, a pox on their house, they are, you know, they what have ruined America in the last part of the 20th century.
Another guy that has served as a governor, he was the governor of New Mexico. You might not have heard about him yet, ladies and gentlemen, and I don't think he's going to make a big splash only because the media is not going to allow it. But this was a guy who ran for governor and won during his first try for office without ever holding an office lower than that. The first time he ever put together a political campaign, he ran for governor and he won it. He was a businessman. His name is Gary Johnson. Keith mentioned a second ago a very good quote that he made in one of these debates. I have heard some very good things behind the scenes about Gary Johnson. If for whatever reason you have some sort of a problem with Ron Paul, who I think is the candidate we should vote for that has the best chance of winning in the GOP, Gary Johnson might be your guy. I would certainly encourage you to keep him in mind and study a little more about him. Keith, what do you have to say about Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico?
He's a stalking horse for the globalist and for the Hispanic lobby. Don't be fooled. He's coming in there. He wouldn't have been elected governor of New Mexico if he didn't do some serious pandering to the Hispanic interests and the globalist interests. He is not the guy that you want. There's not a lot known about him now, and they trotted him in, and he made that brilliant comment in the debates. But, you know, one brilliant comment does not tell you everything you need to know about somebody who's running for president. So I would keep him at an arm's length, at least for the time being.
I very rarely disagree with my friend and comrade Keith Alexander, but my sources are giving me good intel on Gary Johnson. Make up your own mind. The house is split here on this guy, but let's go back up to the top. Rick Perry, Keith, we've been talking about him a lot. Pros and cons.
Okay, well, the pro is he's a red state American, and he irritates all the right people. Quite frankly, the blue state establishment, the Jewish establishment, are worried to death about this guy. You know, they've tried to bring out his, he spoke at some Baptist church in Dallas where the pastor said that Mormonism was a cult. Well, they wanted to, you know, tar him with the brush that he's some boobus ignoramus from red state America. Also, he went to Texas A&M. He didn't go like the Bushes to Harvard, to Yale, where he got his absolution for being a red state boob. But, on the other hand, he's a personal friend of a bunch of Mexican presidents. He has really gotten in bed with, you know, the business interests in Texas that want that cheap labor coming across the border from Mexico. Now, quite frankly, I can sympathize with that because I have a perspective that a lot of conservatives don't. I know that midway through the Civil Rights Movement, black people decided they no longer wanted to perspire for a living. And with an average IQ of 85, at least half of them are unfit for basically much else than that. So consequently, we need to get some labor, and we just don't need these people having birthright citizenship. We don't need them accessing all of our welfare programs and stuff like this, and I hate to see their work ethic corrupted.
We have got just about 2 minutes left in this segment. We got to cover this. I know we've talked about this guy extensively, and we're going to continue to talk about him extensively. Ron Paul, though, I want to get your personal perspective, 30-second pro and con, and then I'm going to ask you the million-dollar question. But your take on Ron Paul, Keith.
Ron Paul is a libertarian, which is the liberal segment of conservatism. He's against a lot of things, but he's not against them for the right reason. He votes for a lot of against a lot of Israeli initiatives, but he's not against them because liberalism is basically a Jewish invention. And quite frankly, without Jewish power and influence, nothing would have amounted to anything in this liberal transformation of America that's taken place over the past 70 years in America.
Keith, not as hot for Ron Paul as I am at the moment. If Election Day were today, I would vote for the same guy in the GOP primary as I did in 2008, Texas Congressman Ron Paul. Keith, pull the curtain from the ballot box and let everybody in the audience know who you'd be pushing the button for if you were voting right now.
It would be down to Ron Paul or Rick Perry. Now, here's the problem. Rick Perry is bad on the border. He's bad on Hispanics. And I don't know that he's really the medicine we need for offshoring and outsourcing. But then on the other hand, neither is Ron Paul. He's an open borders guy, even though he has said that he's not. I've checked out some of the tapes from the last election and the last set of debates in the last election. And he was talking about how much he loved that and also about how much he loved Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement. Even though he's gone against those things now, too, I don't trust him, James.
Now, Keith's absolutely right. He has waffled on the border. He did get down on his knees in service worship at the altar, I should say, of MLK and Rosa Parks, et cetera, as they all do. Listen, folks, it's still only October. It's a long time until the primary season begins. Keith's wanting the microphone, but we're out of time, and the music's playing. You got 5 seconds.
The more you stir it, folks, the more it stinks. That's what the American politics, that's why we call it the political cesspool.
We got to take a break, everybody. We're going to continue to cover the GOP field as this campaign continues to progress. I want to thank Keith Alexander for his services this evening. I'll be back to bring you the second hour right after these words from our sponsors. You're listening to the Political Cesspool radio program.
The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his Fruit of the Looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the Amen.